We get the transportation outcomes that we build for. And a great example of that pre-COVID was when the 35W bridge collapsed. 40,000 trips right after that bridge collapsed disappeared from the road network in the Twin Cities. So MnDOT was freaking out, and everyone was freaking out that that traffic was just going to end up on different bridges across the Mississippi and elsewhere on the road network. What they found back then was that 40,000 trips disappeared. What would that number look like now that remote work is so popular and that we've already seen a huge amount of trips evaporate because of telework?
We're rolling. We are rolling.
Rolling out. This is a real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this. Stop this.
Today. We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now.
So I was listening to your conversation with Jason DeRussia from last week. I was on his show this week. Apparently he's trolling Twitter for wacky Minneapolis characters to present to his driving home from work suburban audience. I thought you did really well, and he came at you. So I want to give people the benefit of the doubt. I thought maybe he was playing devil's advocate because he was inspiring some great responses for you, from you, and it makes me feel like I'm way too soft. I'm not bringing my guests to new heights. I'm just agreeing with them, and the conversations are lame. Nobody wants to hear this. And I should introduce who my guest is. My guest is Alex Burns from Our Streets Minneapolis. Working on the Twin Cities Boulevard project, that wacky project to fill in an interstate and replace it with a boulevard that will still have cars on it, but will have space for other things. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be back. I think the last time we were talking about this was about a year and a half ago, right when we launched the campaign. So a lot to update on and a lot of exciting news recently.
Time is passing so fast. That was a year and a half ago.
Yeah, that's crazy. I know. The experience with Jason DeRussia was interesting. He definitely came out swinging right away.
Yeah.
And I appreciated the opportunity to have the conversation. Like you said, I definitely don't think that was our target supporter base. He asked some good questions, and I think, you know, we believe strongly in the facts behind this campaign, so it's set up well to have a good discussion.
And if I can get this to work, I'm going to play some audio.
The idea of filling in the highway and making it into a boulevard, which I find ridiculous.
So I'm hoping by playing that, I'm inspiring you to just be super eloquent and convince people of the righteousness of your cause.
Filling in the highway and making it into a boulevard, which I find ridiculous.
So people are deeply skeptical of this. And I have to admit, I'm not skeptical because I disagree with your aims or think that it would be bad. It would be just clearly a very good thing to pursue something like this. It's just like I'm skeptical. Like, are people really at MnDOT really going to go for this? Like, politically, I'm skeptical. And I have to congratulate you that you at Our Streets Minneapolis have convinced the state of Minnesota apparently to present alternatives that actually would take out the interstate and make it a boulevard. That is a big achievement in and of itself, expanding the conversation, right?
For sure. Yeah, huge step. And I appreciate you playing the audio. I can feel my blood pressure raising just listening to that. But I mean, first and foremost, I think, I just want to thank the reason that a boulevard conversion is seriously being considered and is on the table is because of all the residents in Minneapolis and St. Paul and elsewhere that have called their council member, that have sent an email to MnDOT, that have attended a public meeting, that have testified, signed the petition. The reason that MnDOT included a boulevard conversion is because they felt like it would be politically unviable for them to not include it, that there was no way that they could get away with not including this option. And that kind of leads into your first question, which is about the viability of this moving forward and MnDOT actually selecting this option. Absolutely, absolutely we could do this. We believe that from day one and continue to believe that now that we have a little bit of momentum. Because, you know, and I think it's important to remember that MnDOT is this big, bad bureaucracy that can seem impenetrable. But at the end of the day, they're supposed to be accountable to the citizens that are impacted by their projects and that use the infrastructure. And we view this just like anything else. You get what you organize for. And we've had an amazing canvassing team that's been out every day talking with people about this idea, getting their feedback, telling them how they can take action. And that's what's paid dividends, I think. And so that's our plan moving forward. We want to go back to the community and let them know this is now an option that's on the table. And you could have this in your backyard. You wouldn't have to deal with the freeway anymore. Share your ideas about what you would like to see this land repurposed for. And we feel like that's going to make it even more difficult for MnDOT to find the political capital to rebuild the freeway. I can tell you there's to my knowledge, there's no one, unless the Minneapolis Chamber or BOMA is paying door knockers to go out and talk about the importance of rebuilding the freeway, I don't think that type of organizing is happening. People don't really get super fired up about the status quo because it sucks. And so we have the advantage of offering a better alternative to people, and we're trying to convert that into continuing to move this idea forward.
That's a good place for me to intro my new segment. Are you ready for my new segment here on the podcast?
I'm ready. I'm honored.
Whoa. Hold on. The pandemic changed everything, man.
So the pandemic changed everything, man.
it sure did. It sure did. I love that intro.
So this comes up a lot with regard to like local street reconstructions. Pandemic changed everything. And meaning people stop a lot. Often people stop taking transit. That is the argument. What are you doing with these bus lanes? No one is taking the bus anymore. The pandemic changed everything. And the alternative argument to that, so transit ridership is coming up, and if we invest in good transit, I think people will take it. That we can rebut that right there. But like with regard to I-94 and interstate removal, if our downtowns are being hollowed out by this post-pandemic work from home craze, and I was surprised this didn't come up in the Jason DeRusha conversation, like, maybe the people who are commuting to work on the interstate are no longer driving on the interstate, and this is a chance to like reduce capacity and not have as big an impact as we think. Like, am I wrong about that? Downtowns hollowed out. Office conversions to residential are all the rage, Alex. People are talking about that. And so yeah. If we're making big changes to our like office to housing or like our downtown landscape, more people living downtown, why not design our transportation system in a way that respects the people who will be living in our cities if the goal is more people living in cities to replace the tax base we lost when the office workers went away?
For sure. Yeah, that actually came up briefly during the conversation, and then he kind of pivoted away from it. But he tried to make this argument that downtown is suffering. Why are you trying to make it more difficult for suburban commuters to get to their offices or get to, you know, a Twins game? But the reality is that downtown is suffering because we've over-prioritized those people. And now I don't think they're ever coming back, not nearly at the level that they were before. So I totally agree. I think, you know, we talk about this all the time. We have to talk about traffic because that's the number one question that gets brought up. And cannot stress enough, this concept of traffic evaporation is real. We get the transportation outcomes that we build for. And a great example of that pre-COVID was when the 35W bridge collapsed. I just learned the statistic this morning at a meeting, and 40,000 trips right after that bridge collapsed disappeared from the road network in the Twin Cities. So MnDOT was freaking out, and everyone was freaking out that that traffic was just going to end up on different bridges across the Mississippi and elsewhere on the road network. What they found back then in 2005 or whenever that happened was that 40,000 trips disappeared. What would that number look like now that remote work is so popular and that we've already seen a huge amount of trips evaporate because of telework? So I think you make a great point that commuting habits are super flexible, and like VMT, vehicle miles traveled, or the amount that people are driving, is about what it was pre-COVID. But a lot of those trips are just short day-to-day trips, people driving around for appointments or meetings or for shopping. And it's fundamentally changed compared to what it was before. And I think that creates, it's perfect timing now with reconsidering this interstate. Because we can choose if we want to double down on the status quo or if we want to create something brand new that incentivizes other ways of people getting around.
So have you ever seen that Safelite glass repair commercial where this young couple with a child is talking about how, gee, it's so good that Safelite will come out anytime we call, because driving our child around late at night is how we get them to go to sleep. my point being that there's a lot of people driving around for very frivolous reasons. Like, you could, that's the only way you could get your child to sleep. I know it's a commercial and I don't want to take it too seriously, but I think there's a lot of people driving around for the hell of it, just because it's like a thing to do. Like, I'll take a bike ride around the lake. I'm going to drive for a while.
Yeah.
See what I see.
DFL Senior Caucus loves to talk about recreational driving, so that's an example right there.
Yes. Here's another thing. Like, so there was a point in your conversation, and I hate to turn this into like recounting your conversation with Jason DeRusha, and it's only because I think it was productive. Like, congratulations, Jason DeRusha. That was a good conversation. I'm glad that it happened, and I don't mind that you were deeply skeptical at all. But let me play this sound. It's very brief.
If I live right by a highway, I would want the highway to be gone too.
He's conceding there that it's a terrible, awful thing. And just from a personal perspective, like, it's making someone else's existence, like, worse, much worse. And the idea that, like, somebody's always going to live next to an interstate. It's going to be the person without options to go and live someplace else where the air is cleaner and it's not as dangerous because of all the traffic it's dumping out into their neighborhood, or it's quieter. If they could afford to live in a better place, a lot of them probably would. Like, I agree with Jason DeRusha. I wouldn't live there. And
yeah.
So I feel like we're failing with some people to make the leap from this other kind of existence is possible. And maybe it comes from a place of thinking the alternative is banning cars. Like, he was a little hung up on that too. Like, you want to ban cars. You want to prevent me from driving at all. And like, this boulevard will have car lanes. Also, there are car lanes all around this city that make driving by far the most convenient, quick, and easy way to get around. I just feel like there's a massive failure of imagination when it comes to, like, reorienting our transportation system in relatively incremental ways. This is a big, ambitious project, but it wouldn't ban cars.
Right. No, that is a great point. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I think to us, and the case that we're trying to make is that this isn't just something that we should do, it's something that we have to do. And there seems to be, I think there's just a lack of empathy, of and urgency by some people who view this as something that's going to burden their lives by adding a few minutes onto their commute times. But that fails to understand the history of how these communities surrounding the interstate have been marginalized and continue to be impacted by the highway. And we've really been intentional about trying to unpack that history. So we have at Open Street Cedar Riverside on August 20th, which we're really excited about, we have a new mobile museum that we've been partnering with using data from Mapping Prejudice and in collaboration with the University of Minnesota Heritage Studies and Public History Museum, where we're going to talk about the history of Cedar Riverside, which, like a lot of other communities across the Twin Cities that have been impacted by highways, the highway was built there in the 1950s and 60s, and the people who were impacted were living there because they, for the most part, didn't have any other options of where they could live. Racial covenants were implemented in predominantly white neighborhoods across the Twin Cities that led black residents, people of color, immigrants, Jewish residents to be forced to live in certain neighborhoods. And then the highways were routed through those communities. And not only did that have devastating impacts when the highways were constructed, but every single day since, these communities have dealt with more polluted air, with noise pollution, which we're just starting to understand the health impacts of that, with lack of access to walkable amenities, to grocery stores, to shops, to jobs, to poor transportation options. These communities tend to be lower on the economic spectrum, so they have less access to a car. And the fact is that when I hear people say, well, yeah, I wouldn't want to live near a highway, but I need the highway to, you know, get to the orchestra or whatever. To me, it's appalling because it's saying that those people don't deserve the same quality of life as these predominantly white neighborhoods that have been protected by protected from infrastructure like highways because of systemic racism, essentially. So we want to make sure that every neighborhood in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and particularly within this project corridor, has access to clean air, to walkable amenities, to not having to deal with traffic noise that's keeping them awake at night, and good non-driving transportation options. And that should be the bare minimum that we strive for every neighborhood. And in our opinion, the only way that we can achieve that with this project is to remove the highway. There's really no other way around it when you look at the impacts of the freeway. So when you look at it in terms of the outcomes that we want to achieve, it becomes less radical. Then it's like, all right, what are the steps we're going to take? We know that projects like this have worked in other cities, so it's really not even like we're trying to do something new. But I think there's kind of a blatant hypocrisy there when I hear quotes like that, like, yeah, of course I wouldn't want to live near an interstate, but removing the interstate is crazy. We need to be affording these communities the same quality of life that many of us are used to.
I think some people see it as like a point in time historical harm. Like, yeah, that's a bad thing that happened in the past, and gee, we should do something to make up for it. But they don't realize, like, no, the harm has been there the whole time, still there, still doing the harm. And so the way the Star Tribune ended the editorial board ended their opinion piece, if MnDOT, and I'm quoting here, if MnDOT were to embark on a pair of projects, one related to improving freeway mobility and safety, and another related to repairing harm to neighboring communities, They are separating the two things as if they're different.
Right. Yeah, like why not expand the freeway and then, I don't know, paint some murals on the bridges or something. Yeah. You know, it's like what does that even mean? That was a terrible piece, and yeah, I have lots of thoughts on that. I just think we can get into that if you'd like, but
I want to go line by line through the Star Tribune opinion. <Yeah. laughs> Then towards the beginning, they're like, who is this project meant to serve? The vast majority of those who use the interstate do not live in the communities that surround it, and commensurate attention should be given to this constituency. As if commensurate and disproportionate attention hasn't been given to this constituency who commutes through a city, driving their cars through a city. That's how they got there in the first place. We come back time and time again when we talk about transportation and like things like parking. Like, if I can't park right outside, that's the equivalent of banning cars. I've been harmed. I have to go home and eat carrots in my refrigerator. Like, the victimhood felt by, and I don't want to personally attack people. If you're listening to this while you're driving, please don't feel personally attacked. But maybe think about some how other people are getting around the city and how they experience the city. Which is the victimhood is over the top sometimes. You'll still be able to drive.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and that stems from entitlement, you know, and that's just another example of 50, 100 years of that constituency that's mentioned being over-prioritized. And also, it's worth pointing out that that's not true. Actually, the majority of the trips on this segment of the corridor either originate or end within the corridor, especially post-COVID. A lot of these are short local trips of people getting routed on the freeway for like a mile. And so all the more reason that we don't need a freeway in the center of our two cities.
Yeah, when I go to Google Maps, because I don't drive, there's my bias. But if I look for like St. Paul to Edina or St. Paul to Minnetonka or St. Paul to wherever on the other side of Minneapolis, it's not having me drive on I-94 through the cities. It's just not having you do that. So I assume that is not the way anyone who lives outside the cities should really be driving. I don't know. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Do you drive, Alex? Are you a hypocrite who also drives?
I'm a hypocrite. I have a car, a 98 Camry that I use very rarely, mostly to visit my parents who live in Woodbury. but I would have to drive on I-94, but I can tell from personal experience there's a million ways to get to Woodbury without driving on I-94. And if I did drive on the Twin Cities Boulevard at, you know, 30 miles per hour, 25 miles per hour, it would be just fine.
It'd be a joy.
Or I could take the Gold Line opening in 2025.
I don't even know what the Gold Line is.
Okay. Yeah,
tell us what the Gold Line is. Well, it's one of those boondoggle buses to nowhere, right?
Yeah, it is a bit. But new bus rapid transit running along I-94 to Woodbury.
I shouldn't take pride in my ignorance, should I?
I do think at some point it would be helpful to talk about the different project options that MnDOT unveiled.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So I would assume that most people listening to this are probably aware, but just to make sure that everyone is up to speed. So right now where we're at in this project process is MnDOT just unveiled 10 initial project options for the future of rethinking I-94, the segment between downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul. Two of those options are boulevard conversion options. Now, of course, MnDOT made it confusing by not calling them boulevard conversion options. They call them at grade A and at grade B, but it would fill in the trench. It would run bus rapid transit, and there's two different configurations of how that would look like in a dedicated lane. And then the rest of the details are to be determined in the future. But, you know, how would you split up the land? Would you turn it into parks, housing, businesses, etc.? What would the intersections look like? That's all to be determined. But two of those options are the boulevard conversion options. The other eight are a variety of rebuilding the freeway. I think there's a couple options that would add a lane to I-94. There's a few options that would keep it the same, but like add a easy pass lane. And then there's one kind of weird zombie option that would remove all the on-ramps and off-ramps on I-94, so it would only be through traffic, and then there would be like two local streets next to it, and then they would build retaining walls. So it would be a narrower trench, but you'd still have a freeway running through the center of it.
What do we think of that one?
You know, I think that my concern, just to be honest, is that MnDOT is trying to include options like expansion to try to like shift the Overton window so that people are like, because honestly, both the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul are already on record as saying expansion is unacceptable. The councils have both passed resolutions saying as much. So the fact that MnDOT included that is absurd. But I think they're including expansion to try to be like, all right, well, we'll wipe expansion off the table, and then we'll wipe the boulevard conversions off the table, and then we'll meet you somewhere in the middle. And I think their goal is to just rebuild the freeway, maybe convert a lane to a min pass lane or easy pass lane. So I think that they call it like the local regional option. I think that fits into it. I mean, honestly, I think that maybe it would be marginally better than the status quo, because you would get a little bit of land in theory that you could repurpose for other things. Who would want to live in between a road or like a street and a freeway? I'm not sure. I don't really know the value of that land for park space or for development or for anything. And you still have all the other impacts of having a freeway running through the neighborhood, in terms of air pollution, noise pollution, etc. And residents can't even use it because there would be no on and off ramps. So you're getting, then it's really like 100% of the traffic is through traffic, suburban traffic, freight traffic, with no benefit to the local community. So, and then I could just go on and on, but I think like also there's kind of this fantasy land that if we keep the trench, we're just going to be able to reconnect all of the cross streets. But that would be incredibly expensive to build all of those retaining walls and the bridges that would be required to reconnect the street grid to what it was before the highway was there. That's one of the main benefits of filling in the trench and bringing it to at grade, is automatically all of the streets that used to be connected are reconnected. And there's actually more traffic that goes across the I-94 trench than goes within it. And so that would be an even better way to improve transportation access, and you would reconnect every neighborhood from Seward and Cedar Riverside, you know, all the way to Rondo. So that was a long way of saying I don't like it. I don't think it's a good option. But plug for an action opportunity: if people are hearing this conversation and are wondering like how they can weigh in, if they go to either TwinCitiesBoulevard.org, or if they just Google Rethinking I-94 and go to MnDOT's website, there is a survey open right now that is taking ideas for options that MnDOT didn't include, and is taking feedback on those 10 options that I just described. And that's probably going to be open for the next couple months. So it's really important that we get as many people taking that survey, sharing their thoughts. I'm sure that Jason DeRusha got a few people checking out MnDOT's website, so we want to make sure that's balanced out with your supporter base.
Okay. Well, you send me that link, and I will include it in the description, and people can go find it.
Maybe it'd be good to talk about like the project timeline, because all this stuff feels a little ambiguous, but
it's true. Okay. Here, I'm gonna pretend to ask you a question about the project timeline.
Perfect.
So Alex, what is the project timeline? When will a decision be made? And then like when would construction potentially happen?
Yeah, great question. So right now, MnDOT released these initial project options. These are high level options. So the idea is they're releasing some ideas to the public. They're getting thoughts on what should change, what should be added. For example, during the public comment period of the meeting, a lot of people were like, why not include a subway tunnel? We already have this trench. If you're going to build a boulevard, why won't you run like regional rail or some type of transit below ground. Be a better use of the land, it would be faster, etc. So in theory, that's an option that could be added back. But they're taking feedback through this survey, through other meetings, and then they'll come back to the Policy Advisory Committee meeting, which is this group of elected officials, probably sometime in December. They'll have updated options. They will present on their analysis on like traffic impacts and things like that. They'll do another round of edits, and then the options will be refined and finalized into the next phase of the environmental impact statement process, or the EIS process. So I guess there's like, if you want to think about this as like making a sports team roster, you know, we have a bunch of players trying out right now. There's going to be two waves of cuts and edits. And then in the spring, that's when we find out who makes the team. And so right now we have two Boulevard conversion players trying out. And it's our job as organizers, I guess, to make sure that they make it into the final cut of the what's called the scoping decision document. And then we continue through the EIS. MnDOT's going to evaluate those different options. They'll take public comment. We probably won't have a preferred alternative until late 2024 or early 2025. And the preferred alternative is the option that MnDOT has selected to build. And then, you know, who knows what happens after that, but in theory, they could start construction like probably like 2028. And okay, whatever they do, whether it's rebuilding the freeway or if it's a boulevard conversion, it's almost certainly going to be phased. So it would be in different phases, but that's the timeline that we're looking at.
I just want to say thank you for that sports metaphor. There's nothing my audience loves more than a sports metaphor. And it's coming up pretty quick.
Yeah.
Potential. Is it going to be one of those things with like 35 where it's gone for many, many years? Like whatever happens, it's going to be a construction site for many, many years.
No doubt. Yeah. That's another thing we hear, like, well, turning it into a boulevard is going to be really disruptive for construction. This thing is going to be a nightmare no matter what. If you drive, I guess. But a major construction project's happening one way or the other.
And somehow we're going to figure out a way to live without it for all those years. And we might
with 35, right? Like,
yeah,
things were just fine. Hennepin Avenue downtown, same thing, you know? Did we really need four lanes of traffic?
One of the things that happened during the 35 construction is it was constantly used as a rallying cry for why we couldn't fix other streets. Like, not now. 35 is under construction. All these cars are going to be on our local streets. We can't change any of those. That would be a huge mistake. And I don't know if the people who said that suddenly became open to changing some of the local streets after 35 opened up again, but it's one of those things you hear.
Yeah, for sure. They like narrowed the bike lanes on Park in Portland, and it was also used as an excuse for delaying the Lindale 4-3 conversion. So yeah, for sure.
Shout out to traffic evaporation with the Lindale 4-3 lane conversion. Turns out all those people didn't need to be driving super fast and crashing, doing bumper cars right outside our windows here in the Wedge in Whittier. Alex is in Whittier. I'm in the Wedge. We are what's the right word for the way we relate to Lindale Avenue? It's escaping me here.
I don't know. I guess
we can skip that. But live to either side of Lindale Avenue in two neighborhoods, and so this that affects us very deeply. We bonded over Lindale Avenue. You would send me crash photos constantly from Lindale Avenue. That doesn't happen anymore. Although it probably does happen, but not as often.
No, yeah, I was your correspondent at 25th and Lindale, and yeah, I think I would describe that as we're located in the greater Cat Tour area.
So in the heart of the Wedge Whittier mini metro area.
Yeah, for sure.
So, what kind of coalition have you built in support of this? I get the vague impression, like I saw Mitra from St. Paul, Councilmember Mitra Jalali, At one of those meetings, I don't even know what that meeting was. There was a representative from Minneapolis who was also in the story I saw. It feels like there's a lot of like local elected officials who are on the right side pushing for the right things. So have you like solidified the Minneapolis-St. Paul coalition in favor of this? Like, who is left to convince?
That's a good question. We definitely have a really strong base of support. And starting here in Minneapolis, Councilmember Robin Wansley has been an outspoken champion for this. It's something that Ward 2 residents have been really excited about. So her office has been great. On the county side, Commissioner Angela Conley has been a big-time supporter and has consistently stood up for this vision. In the legislature, on the House side, Representative Samantha Sensor-Mira has been great and sponsored legislation in the House to commission a feasibility study of a boulevard conversion, which would be like a separate analysis to make sure that this option gets due diligence. And then on the Senate side, Senator Omar Fateh did the same thing, and his office has been really supportive as well. And then in St. Paul, in the legislature, Representative Callie Van Her was also a co-author on that House bill. Even Senator Sandra Pappas, who was initially, I think, pretty skeptical, I think because she's been hearing about this a lot, ultimately signed on to the Senate bill. Senator Aaron Murphy has been supportive. Representative Lee Finke has been supportive. I think, and then on the council side, Mitra has been great in consistently speaking up for these issues. I think that we have a little bit of work to do. Well, I think we have work to do with the mayors in both Minneapolis and St. Paul. I think that they've been pretty quiet on this issue. And so it's kind of unknown like where they or like the public works stands or what they're saying behind the scenes. But in terms of the people who have like commented on this, it's been really positive. And the more people are like speaking up and asking about this, especially on the city council level, we're in election season. This issue is coming up a lot from what we've heard. And so people have to form an opinion on it one way or the other. So, I would say the next frontier is the mayors in Minneapolis and St. Paul.
I'm looking at some of the stats you sent me, and I have not had time to digest these numbers. Is there anything that stands out from some of these like traffic volume stats in this document here?
If I had to give my prediction of how things are going to unfold in the next few months, I would say that MnDOT is going to come back with a traffic analysis that says two things. One, their traffic analysis of these options is going to say that adding a lane to I-94 is going to reduce congestion significantly. It's going to be a great thing. It's going to save X amount of hours of commuting, which translates to X amount of economic development and value. And they're going to try to make the case for adding a lane through that way. And this model that they use is the four-step model. They use the Met Council's regional travel demand model. Complete. I don't know if I can swear on this podcast, but
it's
BS.
Do it.
It's BS. Bullshit. I had to keep it in during DeRusha, so I'm just gonna let loose here. But it's garbage. These models have consistently proven to be incorrect. But nonetheless, that's what they're going to say. On the flip side, we've seen some of their initial traffic modeling that shows that they're predicting traffic chaos for the boulevard options. They're going to go in front of these policy advisory committee members, legislators, elected officials, and they're going to say that we can't do this boulevard conversion option because it's going to make traffic on University increase by 70%, and on Marshall and on Summit and the entire street grid around it, you're just going to be clogged with cars. And we'll see ultimately, you know, how people respond to that. But what our job is in the coming months is to point out all the reasons why that's not true. And we're in the process right now of doing our own traffic modeling. We're working with a really great consultant team that's worked on highway removal projects in other places to demonstrate the flaws in MnDOT's analysis. But that's how I think this thing is going to play out. And the documents that you're referring to, that's kind of the main takeaway that I had from them. I thought there was another interesting line in there. These are the meeting notes from these, for the sake of the audience, like they're meeting notes of these internal meetings that MnDOT has with city staff from Minneapolis and St. Paul and from the counties. And on there was someone commented that they needed to remove trees from the boulevard conversion rendering because they were worried that PAC members would like it too much. And they needed to, I'm dead serious. They needed to remind them of, you know, the quote unquote impacts of like a decision like that. So,
it's going to be bare pavement all the way through if you fill it in. No green space at all. There is no opportunity to make this look nice. It's going to be awful.
Yeah. And I should say, we talked about the survey. People should reminder. Those renderings are not to scale. MnDOT has admitted this. They make the boulevard option look like it takes up the same footprint as the freeway option, which is completely not true. On the website on TwinCitiesBoulevard.org, we created some renderings that are more to scale, which show like how much land would be repurposed. But I mean, renderings are really powerful, and images in terms of how people react to different ideas. So that's something that MnDOT has discussed internally already. But yeah, those conversations are happening.
So something you said reminded me, like other cities have done this. And so again, back to the conversation you had with Jason DeRussia, and the idea that this is just like so outlandish and far-fetched and not in America. We don't do this in America. The guy who called in and was like, this is not Vancouver. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
there are cities in this country that have done this. I think, have they all worked out fine? Did they come out of the other side doing okay?
Yeah, absolutely. There's not a single, I think we said this on the first time Jose and I joined, but there's not a single example of a highway removal project that's failed. And there's not a single example of a building a freeway through a neighborhood that worked out well. And so, I think Jason said this during the interview, and I didn't really get a chance to respond, but a lot of the other places that this has happened, at least in the U.S., have been spur freeway segments, like in Milwaukee, where they built the new Bucks Arena, or the Embarcadero downtown San Francisco, Inner Loop Freeway in Rochester, New York. Yes, like the traffic volumes are lower. Yes, they're smaller segments. Typically, they're like 2 to 3 miles instead of 7.5 miles, which is what we're talking about. But there's no reason to believe that the scale of the success and of the impacts of those projects wouldn't translate here. And I think like this segment is just so perfect because it's the core segment of these two major cities that were built long before the freeway came through. And so I think it's a perfect candidate, and we really have an opportunity in Minneapolis and St. Paul to be the example that all the other cities, not just in America, but around the world, are pointing to when they're considering what to do with their freeways too.
That might be a good place for me to end a remarkably short episode of the Wedge Live podcast. Do you think so? Are you tired of me?
Okay, could I plug an event?
Yeah, go ahead, plug an event. Let me ask you.
Okay.
Alex, do you have any upcoming events that you would like to plug?
Definitely. We've got a community visioning session. It's coming up on Saturday, August 5th. And something that we get asked about a fair amount is on the flexibility of what we're advocating for and the Twin Cities Boulevard. I want to be clear that the Twin Cities Boulevard could take a million different forms and it's probably going to look different in each neighborhood. We want to make sure that we're collecting all the community ideas and feedback about what people want to see as part of reimagining this freeway. So we're hosting an event on Saturday, August 5th in Cedar Riverside at Curry Park. It's from 2 to 5, and we're co-hosting it with Mixed Blood Theater and Million Artist Movement. And it's going to be really cool. We'll have free food, number one. That's probably the biggest reason people will turn up. But also, Million Artist Movement does these really amazing interpretive quilts. So they'll walk people through creating a quilt square with their experience and priorities for the future of the freeway. And then those will be quilted together into a big interpretive quilt that will either continue or display at Open Street Cedar Riverside on August 20th. But we'll also have other ways that people can share their feedback as well. But that's one way that we want to make sure that what we're advocating for is representative of what people want to see. And also just collect ideas of and stories of things that we haven't heard yet. So if people are free next Saturday, definitely stop by Curry Park, 2 to 5. Yeah, it'd be great to see you there.
Okay. Well, Alex, are you an interesting person? This last segment is what I ask people so that my audience can decide if you are an interesting person. Recommend something to them. Are you enjoying anything lately? You been going any interesting places? You got a new hobby, a new book, or a movie, or a video game you'd like to recommend?
It's a tough time to ask that question because this
MnDOT
stuff has consumed my life. So I would say probably no to being an interesting person. But I saw Barbenheimer. I did the Barbenheimer bit.
Oh, is that a thing where you go see Barbie and Oppenheimer on the same day?
Yeah. My roommate and some friends organized a double feature. And so I guess my review of both was I thought they were both good. I would give Barbie the slight edge, I think. But okay, if you're going to do it, see Oppenheimer first and use the bathroom before you enter the theater.
How long is it?
It's like over 3 hours. Hmm. Yeah.
I feel like they should make a movie about you and the I-94 removal in the style of the Oppenheimer movie. Super genius engineering this big bad thing that is good but could also destroy the world and cause people to have to eat carrots in the refrigerator at home.
I don't think my personal life is nearly as messy and interesting as Oppenheimer, so I don't know if people would see that, but maybe.
Well, Alex Burns, thank you. From Our Streets, Minneapolis, his project is Twin Cities Boulevard Project, which is about converting I-94 into a boulevard where you could still drive. There's still be driving, promise. And this has been the Wedge Live Podcast. I'm your host, John Edwards. Thank you for listening.
This is a real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now. 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 Right now.